This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It was in 1918 that Texas raised the age of criminal responsibility to 17 years old. Before that, if you were 9, you could be convicted as an adult for a crime. Today, Texas is considering raising that age again, this time to 18 years old. Texas is one of 7 states that still treats 17-year-old offenders as adults in the justice system. Last week, the Texas House passed a bill that would raise the age of criminal responsibility to 18 years old, beginning in 2021. But the fate of it is in the Senate's hands, and that fate is uncertain. Critics maintain that the cost and the safety and the risk overcrowding facilities are there, and that adult crime is committed, then adult time should be served. Advocates say raise the age legislation would give 17-year-olds one last shot at rehabilitation. Offenders receive more treatment and educational services as juveniles than in the adult detention facilities. Raising the age could reduce recidivism, they argue. At the cost of implementation, they say, is exaggerated. Should Texas move thousands of 17-year-olds out of the adult prisons and into the juvenile justice system? What is your experience with the juvenile crime system? Have you been a victim of it? Maybe you were in the system. Texas has long had a history of not doing juvenile justice right. We had a massive TYC scandal, but then in 2007, closer to home reforms have produced results that have been universally praised. Call in. We want to hear your comments about this topic. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined in the studio by Professor Gary Remy, professor at St. Mary's University School of Law and a consultant and regular lecturer for law enforcement agencies and the criminal defense bar and the judiciary. Also with us is Lindsay Linder, policy attorney for the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition, and Vicki Spriggs. She is the CEO of the Texas CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, and the former executive director of the Texas Juvenile Probation Commission. Welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So, Professor Remy, tell me your thoughts about bumping the age up from 17 to 18. Why does that make a big difference?
I think it makes a big difference for a variety of reasons. My own experience doing juvenile defense work before I began teaching full-time convinced me that 17-year-olds simply lack the maturity and the judgment to be held accountable in the same way that adults do. Now, raising the age from 17 to 18 is at least a first step toward making criminal responsibility more consistent, I think, with the ability of the person who's offending to process information and make good judgments. It also just seems to me completely incongruous to say that a 17-year-old becomes an adult for criminal justice purposes when nothing else of real significance happens when you turn 17. Most people intuitively think that they won't face adult criminal sanctions until they turn 18 or perhaps even 21, and they are sometimes very badly surprised to learn that all of a sudden they're not going to a juvenile detention facility or being put on juvenile probation. Instead, they're going to a state adult prison.
So you're saying if you're 17 years old, you can't sign a contract, you can't buy a pack of cigarettes.
That's right.
You can't vote.
You
can't do all sorts of things, but if you step out of line, you can face adult criminal justice system.
Exactly. And to me, that just makes no sense to have that very momentous birthday out of whack with everything else that's going on in that teenager's life.
Vicki Spriggs, Texas CASA, can you talk about why legally we think about juveniles differently than adults? Where there's a whole different mindset that comes into play when we talk about, even though they may have committed the same sort of crime, we're going to treat them differently. Why do we do that?
We do that because all the studies tell us that the brain doesn't mature or fully develop until a child reaches, the mid-20s to early to mid-20s. And so you have an adult system that's predicated on punishment and enforcing the law. You have a juvenile system that is predicated on the belief that a child could change, and that rehabilitation then becomes the focus. So with rehabilitation as a focus, you now have a different kind of resource coming to bear, or a variety of resources coming to bear, and that being the focus of how the system intervenes with the child. There's still accountability for their actions, but instead of looking at punishment, you're looking at the why of the action, looking at the background of what is happening or has happened in that child's life that led to this event. Is it a one-time event, or is it something that is more deeply rooted? And then depending upon the genesis of the event, then appropriate resources are identified and then appropriated. I think that pretty well sums it up. I mean, again, with the adult system too, because punishment is the objective and the assumption that you are mature enough to, as Gary said, do the crime, do the time, then there are things that aren't in place. So here you are, a 17-year-old going into an adult system where you are likely to be one of the smaller people in that institution, which now means you are subject to different kinds of psychological abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse. And I want to step into my role as the executive director of Texas CASA in that if you're a child who comes out of the foster care system and you end up in the adult system, you've already been traumatized, which is why you're in the foster care system. And now you're in this other system that is not geared to your needs, where the likelihood of trauma is even higher. Additionally, because the adult system is set up in such a way that doesn't have the safeguards the juveniles system does, in terms of if you're incarcerated, the population is designed for a mixed population. Because of regulations that require sight and sound separation, you might have a juvenile then, or a 17-year-old, in the adult system who, for their safety, is put in solitary confinement. So now you have additional mental health issues that come about from segregating a child from any interactions with other people. And it's done for their physical safety, but then their mental health is jeopardized. And again, if you're a child who's been in the state's foster care system, you've already been traumatized. So now you have this jail setting trauma that's taking place. And now if you're put in solitary confinement, you have some other issues that can come to bear. So the difference is significant. Just the basis of the of both systems' development, the adult system realities versus juvenile system realities, punishment versus rehabilitation, two different outcomes for the 17-year-old entering either system.
So the main differences between the Texas juvenile and adult criminal justice systems are, as outlined in the Texas Family Code and the Texas Penal Code, revolve around the fact that the primary purpose of juvenile justice is to protect and rehabilitate, but for adults, that goal is to punish the guilty. That's why we have to think about, well, where do we put 17-year-olds? Should we put them in the adult system, or do we say they still deserve an opportunity for protection and rehabilitation and one last chance to get it right? And we have seen other states that have done this, a big results in reduction of recidivism. We're going to talk about this more when we come back from the break. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas is one of seven states that still treats 17-year-old offenders as adults in the juvenile in the criminal justice system. Lawmakers in Austin are considering raise the age legislation. It has passed the House. It's in the hands of the Senate. We're talking about the pros and cons of that this afternoon. We welcome your calls. Numbers 210-614-8980. I'm going to get to a call right here with Evan. And Evan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. You know, as I'm going to start off by saying I actually have a background in being a detention officer here in Bexar County. So I've seen actually quite a few 17-year-olds come through the jail and head off to the main prison system. And a lot of them are 18-year-olds who actually don't even get past the point of county jail. I have to say that in my experience, and I actually oppose this bill, and I don't want them to change the age, because in the generation that I'm coming from, I'm under 30 years old, I'm about to turn 27, we have a lot of younger people being bold and making the decisions knowing full well what the consequences will be, and they're making the decisions to make the choices, whatever that might be. And I've seen the results. They come through the jail, they come to me, and as I'm the unit officer, they are actually rather well adjusted to a certain extent with their surroundings, and they're put into units with the with basically like-minded individuals. They're not going to be put into a unit where their cellmate is a 200-pound guy who's been to TDC for 14 years and is going back for probably his fourth, fifth time for homicide. They actually do segregate to whole units and not all together to administrative segregation, which is solitary. I think we're being far too lenient with thinking we can rehabilitate in the juvenile system, whereas the proper focus of rehabilitation in the adult setting would be far more helpful to not only adults, but also the children who are making it into that system for doing the crimes that adults do. Because already we have programs, we have adults, we have teachers, we have a lot of warning systems to, you know, deter from crime. We have officers out there getting in with their communities, telling these kids, do not walk in the steps of your parents, do not walk in the steps of your of people before you. We have programs like San Antonio CASA, where they, you know, okay, they guide these children, and yet when these children still make that choice, we turn our heads and say, "Oh, it's okay, you're a child." And yet, I've raised two children, okay, if it's magically believable, and I've seen children go through the criminal justice system. I've saved, okay, two people from jail, from their time. They spent 6 months in jail, and time,
Evan,
listening to them, and
we got your point. I appreciate you calling in and making that point. So let me get reaction from Lindsay Linder with the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, and thank you so much for calling in with your question. I appreciate your experience and your perspective, but a couple of things that I just want to point out. First of all, brain science and developmental science have proven that in terms of impulse control and in terms of being able to really comprehend the consequences of actions that we're making, that does not develop until mid-20s. That is just fact. Someone explained it really well, that you have a 17-year-old has a fully developed accelerator, but a partially developed brake. So when you talk about understanding consequences and understanding, you know, they know full well what they're doing, I think is how you phrased it. That might be true. They might know full well what they're doing, but they are not developed to the extent that they have impulse control that's fully developed and that they have the ability to really comprehend the long-term consequences of the action that they're making. That's what science and developmental psychology have taught us in recent years. But I also want to point out that for particularly serious offenses, raise the age does not alter a judge's ability to certify a youth to be charged as an adult and prosecuted through the adult criminal justice system. That is currently available in Texas, and it will not change under raise the age legislation. So it's important to note that if there's a particularly heinous crime, we're not talking about refusing to allow 17-year-olds to be processed through the adult system. In fact, as young as 14 years old, judges will still have discretion to certify those children to be held accountable in the adult criminal justice system. Lastly, I just want to point out one more thing. 95% of the 17-year-olds who are arrested in Texas are for nonviolent and misdemeanor behavior. So the specific children that you're talking about, that you have personal experience with, probably don't fall into the vast majority of the 17-year-olds that we're talking about. For 95% of the 17-year-olds, we're talking about nonviolent and misdemeanor behavior. So these are folks who go onto adult probation, and in the juvenile system, they would go onto juvenile probation. So the portion of the 17-year-olds who actually are currently in confinement or would be in confinement under this bill, it's a very small percentage. And that's significant because we're comparing adult probation to juvenile probation, not adult incarceration to juvenile incarceration, or talking about releasing folks who would currently be incarcerated. We're talking about serving them in a different system that really, really focuses on rehabilitation and wraparound services that can go into the community and communicate with the child's school, that can go into the house and communicate with the child's family, with their parents. They can be involved in the process. And you have, you know, the opportunity for, you know, your records to be sealed to a more significant degree in the juvenile system. So when we're talking about the vast majority of these 17-year-olds committing low-level and misdemeanor offenses. I spoke with someone yesterday who just happened to call my office because they had seen coverage about Raise the Age and wanted to talk with me. And he let me know that when he was 17, most of his friends were 16. And his friend who was 16 was stealing checks from his parents' safe. And because he was 17, he was the only friend with a driver's license. And so they were giving him the checks to cash. He signed and cashed them. And then they, as a group, were spending the money. Well, the parents found out, and they pressed charges against all of them. The 16-year-olds were processed through the juvenile system, and he, being 17, was prosecuted through the adult system. The 16-year-olds probably received probation. They had, you know, intervention into the situation with their family, with school, and kind of, you know, it was a slap on the wrist. It was, they were being held accountable, and it was something that could be mitigated in terms of the collateral consequences that they were going to face in the future, because that is a very juvenile decision to make, and albeit criminal, but it's not violent, and it's not behavior that I think would warrant branding someone for the rest of their life as a felony. But that is, in fact, what happened to the 17-year-old. He got a felony. He has a felony on his record to this day, and it has significantly impacted his ability to go out in the community and be a productive member of society. It has dictated where he can live. It's dictated what kind of jobs are available to him. And that is not a smart system that's not accounting for these, as the Supreme Court case, Miller put it, these, you know, factors that are associated with youth. That is a juvenile offense, and we should be dealing with it as he was a child who was being reckless and deserved accountability. But do we really want to brand him as a felon for the rest of his life? That seems like something that we should be aware of. And as Representative Cook phrased it on the House floor the other day, he's a Republican. He said that's an economic death sentence for these 17-year-olds. Okay. And I think that that's absolutely true.
Let me go to the caller, Jerry. Jerry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. What I was calling about was seeing if we can get some more money into the juvenile system so you've got more case officers able to handle an increased number of juveniles coming in. And generally what I've seen is that the problem is having enough money that there is a slot in a program to get a juvenile in there in the first place and get him a chance to get some assistance.
Okay.
So I want to see if there's anything in here to provide some extra money or extra people to work within the juvenile system.
All right, Jerry, thank you for the call. And so, Vicki Spriggs, will they get more money for the juvenile justice system if this law passes?
If I'm correct, I understand that $7 million has been put in Article 11 to address the resource, the increased resource need. Now, I also understand, to be fair, that the larger counties are saying that it's going to take more than that per county to address this influx or the increasing numbers. I don't have any data to particularly support that. I'm just reporting what I understand. However, I would imagine that ideally the bill passes, everybody's able to see in those first 2 years what the need is, and then during the next legislative session, the data can be presented that will allow leadership to then increase the funds set aside to address this issue.
I want to go back to a quick point that we heard from Vicky, and we'll probably hit this a few times during the rest of the show, about the paper penalty that people pay when they commit a crime. And if you're 17 years old, that's going to stick with you for the rest of your life. You now have to check the box, and that is an economic death sentence. So Professor Remy from St. Mary's University, how big of a deal is that?
It's a huge deal. You literally are dragging this ball and chain around with you the rest of your life. It keeps you from getting certifications. It keeps you from qualifying for jobs. I work closely doing volunteer work with veterans who have spectacularly good qualifications and records in many respects, and yet they will have a criminal conviction for a misdemeanor offense that's 20 years old, and it keeps them from getting a job. This is the kind of thing that juveniles face, and I think we have to keep in mind here to preserve our perspective on this. Virtually everyone, if he or she is honest about it, has made youthful mistakes. This is something that people do. It's part of the maturing process. When you make those mistakes, usually you get correction if you're lucky. Perhaps you get away with it, but at any rate, you're not punished over the long term of your life.
And you frequently, and let me just add to that, but where you are in the social structure also determines whether or not you're going to get a pass, a second chance, or you're going to get the full weight of the judicial system on your head.
It absolutely does. I had retained juvenile clients whose parents were able to afford to hire a lawyer and were able to afford them the opportunity to change and to rehabilitate in a way that many of my appointed clients just didn't have. And so certainly there is a disparity in the juvenile justice system, just as there is in the adult juvenile system or adult criminal justice system. But the records, the effect of a criminal record cannot be overstated. And that's something that you can pick up when you're 17 years old. You never get rid of it. The expunction laws in the state of Texas are so restrictive that it's virtually impossible to expunge a criminal record. And so once you have it, you're going to carry it around with you the rest of your life.
So are we talking about, like, you mentioned, Lindsay, that 95% of these crimes for this area are not violent? So were they shoplifters? What is this type of crime that these people usually commit?
Yeah, 95% are for nonviolent and misdemeanor behavior. And we actually did, in collaboration with Texas Appleseed and the Texas Public Policy Foundation and some other folks, we recently put out a report specifically looking at this population. And what we found is that 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds are very much alike in the types of offenses that they commit. The vast majority of those were low-level theft offenses and low-level drug offenses, specifically marijuana.
Okay. So, but we do know that when juveniles commit violent crimes or crimes with firearms, that they do have a different system that they have to deal with. They do serve tough time, time that is so tough that adults would rather be in the walls unit than having to go to some of these camps that these tough juveniles have to go to. We'll talk more about that. We'll also talk about determinate sentencing when we come back from the break, which is how we deal with juveniles who commit murder and sexual crimes. Why that is not going to go away, why that's important, why we need to know about that as we consider this important issue. And we'll go back to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
President Trump and Russia. That's this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
KSTX weather for San Antonio.
Partly cloudy today with a high in the upper 80s. Clear tonight with a low in the upper 60s. Then tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 80s.
KSTX thanks the following business members for their financial support. The Phyllis Brown & Company, Realtors. Dr. Dennis Karasik of the Spine and Pain Center of San Antonio. the financial planning firm of iFinancial, Dr. Karen S. Berkowitz, Ph.D., licensed psychologist, Einstein and Habishaw PC, attorneys at law, and European Artisan Upholstery. Learn more about these business members at tpr.org. Join TPR at Fort Martin Scott in Fredericksburg on Friday, April 28th for a special cocktail reception celebrating Frontier Days at the Fort. The reception will be from 5 to 6 p.m. followed by dinner at 6. Members will be able to enjoy free tours of the Fort, visiting with reenactors, and enjoying live music. Please reserve your space by emailing rsvp at tpr.org. The event is a privilege of your TPR membership.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, after a bloody Taliban attack on a military base, Defense Secretary Mattis is in Afghanistan. How long and deeply should the U.S. stay involved? Plus, the flap over Ann Coulter at Berkeley is just the latest in a slew. We'll look at free speech and college campuses. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us weeknights at 7 for On Point on Texas Public Radio.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. If you're 16 years old, even the day before you turn 17 and you commit a crime, you know, shoplifting, maybe a marijuana law, something not violent, you're going to get treated much, much differently than one day older. If you're 17 years old, suddenly you're going to go into the adult criminal justice system, and things are going to be tough, and it's going to be, are going to be consequences. They're going to last the rest of your life. Now, lawmakers in Austin are considering raising the age legislation. Texas is one of seven states that still treats 17-year-olds as adults in the justice system. If this law passes, it would be a big change for Texas in the way that we treat juveniles in the state. We invite you into the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. And Gelman has called in. And Gelman, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I was just calling to give a comment about my experience when I was a 17-year-old back in 1998. I lived in Houston, and I went to a club at the age of 17, and it was raided because they were serving underage minors alcohol. Now, I was not drinking any alcohol at the time, but I was 17 and there was a curfew in place. So the Houston Police Department came over, picked us up, put us in the paddy wagon, and took us over, and I was there for probably a whole night. I was there a whole night the next day, and I was released the next morning, and I was in jail with adults. Now, this has stuck with me my whole life since then, because I just didn't think that it was fair that I was getting arrested for being underage, but at the same time I was being put in jail with overage people.
Gelman, that captures the irony of the situation, and Professor Remy from St. Mary's University is nodding his head in agreement that that is certainly worth noting. So, Professor?
I think Gelman makes a great point. It not only is ironic, but it also is dangerous. We're taking teenagers who are underage, people who are 17 years old, they're going to the Bexar County Jail, they're going to an adult detention facility. We call it a detention facility, but I think we all know that we're talking about a jail. With juveniles, juvenile detention facilities are separate facilities, and they have to be certified as qualified to be juvenile detention facilities. So the 16-year-old in Gelman's situation, who was rounded up in that club raid, would have gone to a different facility, wouldn't have been put in a holding cell with adults, would have had rights regarding interrogation and other things that Gelman didn't enjoy, and the only difference is a birth date. And that doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
So we heard from a caller, Evan, earlier, and he works as a detention officer, and he pointed out that we break people up into different categories for different floors in different pods in the Bexar County Jail and other jails. You know, have a pod just for the Mexican Mafia. We have different ones for sex offenders. We have a pod really for juveniles. And then, so we have these 17-year-olds, and they are not really mixed in with the high-level degree murderers who are waiting to be shipped off to, the state pen. But that doesn't mean that these 17-year-olds who committed these low-level crimes who are in the Bexar County Jail are being protected from other offenders. They're in a general population, and they're still having to fend for themselves. So Lindsay Linder over at the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition, is that how you see it?
So I think that there, again, are a couple of things to consider. First of all, Texas is such a massive state, and, you know, with over 200 counties, you're talking about vast disparities in how people are detained. Certainly there are counties that do not have the resources to keep 17-year-olds, in a youthful offender pod, if you will, things like that. What happens is that to comply with the Prison Rape Elimination Act, a lot of these 17-year-olds are being kept in administrative segregation, and that is incredibly dangerous for them. Excuse me. What we know is that 17-year-olds in adult facilities are 36 times more likely to commit suicide. And that is not a factor that doesn't affect Texas. Just in, maybe I think a couple months ago in Fort Bend County Jail, a 17-year-old hanged himself tragically. And so we can't pretend that we are above putting our 17-year-olds at risk in our jails and our prisons. I also think, again, it's important to think back to the fact that 95% of this population is for nonviolent and misdemeanor behavior, so not necessarily folks who need to be incarcerated. So we need to think about the impacts of prosecuting not just folks who would actually be incarcerated, but the whole entire population. There are consequences for folks who would never, actually be detained beyond intake that need to be considered. But certainly adult prisons and jails are no place for 17-year-olds, because think about anyone who has a 17-year-old and how do you feel about them? Do you consider them a child? And I think that absolutely you do consider your 17-year-old to still be a child.
And so it sounds like you're saying even going through booking in and of itself and then being released is a traumatic experience that a 17-year-old may not want to go through. Juvenile probation department directors in Harris and Dallas counties have both expressed concerns about capacity and financial support. They're not sure they're able to take on these 17-year-olds if they get diverted into their responsibility. And we did reach out to officials at the Bexar County Juvenile Probation Department, but they were not able to join us for our program today as we talk about the raising the age. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, and Holly is on the line. Holly, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, go right ahead.
I worked as a teacher for the Texas Youth Commission from 2007 until 2012, and now work for CPS. But I would like to say that when I was there, when they no longer allowed misdemeanors in the Texas Youth Commission in TYC, which is now TJJD, the Texas Department of Juvenile Justice, and they did not allow kids with misdemeanors in that system. And yet, some of those kids can still get their records sealed. They're all felons, but they can get the records sealed if they do ride.
All right, I think you made your point that there are some remedies out there available. Can you address that, Vicki Spriggs from CASA?
I'm trying to figure out. Her point was misdemeanors weren't allowed to be committed to TYC.
I think she was trying to make the point that it's not as dire as we're making it sound like for 17-year-olds who end up in the system, that they still can get their records sealed, and that they may, if your misdemeanors, may not end up in the system.
If you're committed to TYC, depending on the level of offense, and I'm going to ask Lindsay to correct me if I'm wrong, there is a certain level of offense at which your records won't be sealed. If it's heinous, if it's a heinous offense, your record won't be sealed. Otherwise, you still have the protections afforded to a juvenile offender, which is your records are sealed.
Okay. So you mentioned the heinous element of this. Okay. So we do know, and it's happening again, that there was a time in the 80s and 90s where youths were committing a lot of violent crimes, and we had this super predator thing that happened at the time. We now know that to be a fallacy and something that should not be used in a mature discussion about crime and justice. But we're seeing another big spike in violent crime in this age group here, and we know that in Texas, that if you committed crime and you're a juvenile with a weapon or sexual assault, you go to a different system. It's very harsh, and it's not it is a tough system. And also, we have determinate sentencing, where if you commit murder and you're 14 years old, you can be tried as an adult. So, Professor Remy, can you talk about that?
Yes, I think people have the idea that if you're a teenager, you're simply given a slap on the wrist and then let go regardless of the crime, and that's simply not true. As we've said, as early as 14 years old, you can be certified by the juvenile court to stand trial as an adult. And if that happens, that means that you're going to be tried as an adult. If convicted, you're going to be sentenced as an adult, and you're going to do time as an adult. It's hard time, and you're going to have that record to drag around behind you the rest of your life when you do get out. And we have to keep in mind, every offender is going to get out. If they don't die in prison, which fortunately doesn't happen to most of them, they will eventually be released. So we're going to get these folks back into society. If we have an opportunity to rehabilitate or retrain youthful offenders particularly, those are the ones who are most susceptible to change. I was a practitioner before I started my teaching career, and I think that's the experience of everybody who's practiced juvenile law. The thing that's exciting about juvenile law and working in the juvenile system, and I think Vicki and Lindsay can both attest to this, is that there's a real opportunity to see people turn their lives around to a much greater extent than you would see in the adult population. So branding somebody as an adult criminal at 14 or at 15, if it's a serious but somewhat less serious felony, or even at 17, it seems to me that that pretty much kills your chances that you're going to have that person turn out well, as opposed to giving them that opportunity that so many juveniles do have.
There's still a lot of concerns about the cost of implementation of this. What about the safety issues for the public in this? Is this a hug-a-thug sort of remedy? And what's the risk of overcrowding the juvenile facilities? We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. 17, we've heard that the brain's not fully developed, but is the 17 old enough to know right from wrong? And what is breaking the law and whether or not they should be held responsible at that level? We're going to continue the conversation. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Our topic today, Texas is one of seven states that still treats 17-year-old offenders as adults in the justice system, the adult justice system. Lawmakers are considering raising the age legislation to increase the age of criminal responsibility to 18 years old. So what are the pros and cons for that? Our number is 210-614-8980. Raul has called in. And Raul, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, sir. Hi. I just wanted to call because I was listening to this, and I have a personal experience with this. In 1987, when I was 17, I went to Bexar County Jail for possession of one marijuana cigarette. And so in 1989, I went and joined the military. I first had to get my GED because I dropped out of high school. And I made a career out of it. In 2010, I retired a chief petty officer and decided to go back to school. And I did. I got an associate's degree. I got my bachelor's degree. Eventually, I got my master's degree in education. And this fall, I'll be a full-time teacher. So I still have to report that I was arrested at 17. We're talking 30 years now. And I just hold this resentment because it's something that happened so long ago. And I felt that I was still a minor. And I just don't understand why I have to carry this ball and chain around my neck for the rest of my life when my record in the past 30 years is exemplary. It frustrates me.
And do you think you were the only kid walking around in 1987 with the marijuana cigarette in their back pocket? I mean, it was all over.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. Absolutely right. It was all over. I was just doing what a kid does. And I made mistakes, certainly, out of school. But then 2 years later, as I mentioned, in 89, right. I got my GED, and I made a fantastic career. I had a fabulous career. I retired a chief petty officer. It's really tough to do. And I went and got several degrees so I can go back to school and hopefully turn on kids through my experience that you can do things differently.
You can get right.
Know, and not have to pay for the rest of your life. Because at this point, I feel like I've done enough.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. I appreciate you calling in with that incredible, inspiring story. I'm going to move on to Alejandro. Alejandro, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Being 17 and being locked up is extremely scary to be in a situation as a kid and then be thrust into an adult situation. It's rough. I was arrested at 17. I was only a month into 17, and I had an altercation with my father over, I don't know, a dog or something that was trying to attack me. Anyway, you know, I hit him in defense, but I got taken to jail, and I spent, you know, a whole Easter there. And for me, you know, Easter would never be the same, but it was real rough, you know. And years later, after the fact, I got a big internship with Disney, so I moved to Florida, and I was doing a big thing there. And they found it. They did a background check on me. They found that this altercation had happened. They brought me into an office. I had a big meeting. Long story short, they were thinking about, you know, letting me go because they have strict standards, you know. And I was afraid I'd lose this big opportunity I had. But luckily, I was able to explain myself and sort of work myself out of it. But it's still there, and it still lingers. And it's, you know, in some ways, always been a motivation for me to continue to get better and learn from that moment so many years ago.
Alejandro, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. You bring up some great points there. And Vicky Spriggs, let me go to you on this. So we've heard about the great sorting that we have in society where they're trying to take different people and bring them into different categories. And if we're so harsh on people at the age of 17, if they're young and they make a mistake, and it's really hard for people to get out of that container, that box that now they're in, into having a productive life, and you could lose opportunities and not be able to enjoy upward mobility. So is that part of the argument, Vicky, that we can try to at least give people another chance before they are branded for the rest of their life as a troublemaker, as a criminal?
Absolutely. Again, I think Lindsay said it and Gary said it before. You have this record. It impacts colleges, whether or not they'll accept you. It impacts your ability to get a job. It impacts where you're able to live. It impacts your overall quality of life. I mean, I think our goal for Texas is to produce taxpayers, not to produce people that we're spending our tax dollars on. And I think by raising the age, we join the other 43 states who have looked at this issue and raised the age and seen a positive outcome as a result. Brighter futures, less crime, and the cost not rise as much as people think or project that they're going to impacting the juvenile system.
Okay, another caller, Alex, on the line. Alex, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to quickly discuss something that was mentioned by that corrections officer and by one of your guests that kind of gets glazed over, I think, really often. The idea that there are so many people that have this idea in their head that the world, that things in the world or just locally to them are worse now than they were before. And I think that goes into connection to what one of your guests said about, you know, if we were honest with ourselves and think back to the, you know, varying levels of hijinks or whatever you want to call it, we used to when we were in kids, we would be way more empathetic. I think one of the biggest things that's changed is just people's awareness of it. You know, there's a point in time where everyone suddenly became aware through news reports and then now through social media of the things that go on from what, you know, way across the country that make people way more scared and then have led us slowly but surely to make these really restrictive laws where you have young 17-year-old kids, you know, with doing misdemeanors, the kinds of misdemeanors that their parents and their probably grandparents committed to, that were just never caught or were way they were way more dealt with way more leniently. And that's
right.
You know, they just led us to that kind of path.
Okay.
That's one of my greatest things. I wish people would get over the idea that things are worse now than they were then. People
need that perspective. Alex, thank you so much for raising that issue. It's a good point to make. Another caller, Fran. Fran, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. I'd like to make a point, and no one has talked about it. And I would say that right now we're talking about the horse after he's out of the corral. And it seems to me that we need to be looking at prevention. Our foster care system, I'm a CASA volunteer, have been for 10 years or so. The system right now, the foster care system, is broken. And we don't seem to know what to do about it. So we're now dealing with these children who have come out of the foster care system, who are angry, who are, and that it, their future, I won't say all the time, but many times is more or less set for them. So I'll just say real quickly, 20 years ago when my daughter became a first grade teacher, we were talking about some of the problems, and she said, Mother, I can tell you today which child from their family background or from what they come into the classroom with, that where they're going to end up and where they're going to be. So why are we not thinking about prevention?
Okay.
And addressing that?
Friend, thank you for the call. And so let me ask you, this isn't this about prevention of Vicki Spriggs? Really quickly about that this is trying to prevent 17-year-olds from becoming lifelong criminals and trying to give them an opportunity to rehabilitate, that maybe they've reached an age where they're mature enough to try to choose a different life.
Yes, but first I'd like to say thank you to Fran for volunteering to be a CASA volunteer for 10 years. That's an amazing commitment to Texas's future. And Dave, specifically to what you said, yes, absolutely. By offering, by just extending by a year the age, we are impacting thousands of young people's lives and giving them that last shot, another opportunity. And for some kids, it's the first time they have contact with the system anyway. And their first contact leads to the adult system. So there is no option after that. And then if we raise the age, that first contact still leaves them in a juvenile justice system that's designed to address the why and designed for rehabilitation and reframing the child's behavior and addressing the causes of that behavior. So yes, it is a tertiary, if you will, prevention. It's not a primary prevention, which is what Fran was talking about, but it is a tertiary prevention, meaning the system's already involved. Now, what is it going to do, and how is the system going to step up? Is it going to step up through the adult system in a punitive fashion, or will it step up in the juvenile system in a rehabilitative manner?
And lastly, Lindsay Linder from the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition, how important is this for prevention for these kids and intervention?
Yeah, it's critically important. I think, you know, when people ask me why I really think that the age should be raised, I always say it's because of safety. It's because of safety for our kids, and it's because of safety for the community. Safety for our kids because, of course, as we've talked about, there are higher rates of sexual abuse, physical abuse, you know, higher chance that they're going to commit suicide in these adult facilities. So it's really about protecting our kids. But secondly, and equally as important, it's about safety for the community. Because when you incarcerate low-level offenders who shouldn't be incarcerated, you're increasing the likelihood that they're going to commit future crimes and are more likely to commit violent crimes. So we're making a decision that is proven to result in worse outcomes for public safety and for these juveniles. So it really is a common sense switch to prosecute these young people through the juvenile system for as long as we can, because it's going to have better outcomes for all of us.
All right. And lastly, you know, real quickly, last word, Professor Remy from St. Mary's University, how important is this to you to see this get accomplished?
It's very important. We spend money earlier we have better outcomes. In the long run, it actually costs us less to invest in our kids than it does in adult facilities.
Okay, this is in the hands of the Texas Senate. We'll see how this goes out. We'll continue covering this. Juvenile justice reform in Texas, raising the age from 17 to 18. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Kim Johnson, Jan Ross Piedad, and David Martin Davies. Management and oversight provided by News Director Shelley Koffler, and production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation and the GAC Health Foundation.
I'm David Martin Davies, and I'm inviting you to the best conversation in town, The Source. Every Monday through Thursday at noon here on KSTX, you have the chance to chat it up with local and national newsmakers, politicians, artists, writers, and more. It's your local, live, and lively call-in news show, and you're part of the program. So tune in and call in to The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM.